Bama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones here with Cecil Hurt. We're on to podcast number 4 of our position preview series. We're going to be talking about the running backs today, which is certainly one of the strongest units on Alabama's team, probably one of the strongest units on any team anywhere in the country. Cecil, you ready to get into it here?
Yeah, I think I'm in charge of running backs this year. I always take over one unit. I've done the punters for the last 4 years. But now that JK's moved on, I think I'm going to take running backs and just sort of be responsible for their success.
Yeah. Burns might have had something to say about that before.
Well, but now that he's out of the way, they need somebody with some experience. So I think I can coach this group.
Yeah. I think I could probably coach this group too.
But you're too late because they're my group.
That's not fair, Cecil. I'm not going to take the quarterbacks. That's too much of a headache.
Please show me in your contract where it says it will be fair.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of returning talent for Alabama at the running back position, led by Damian Harris, who decided to come back for his senior year after posting back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons as a sophomore and junior. He can actually become, this year, the first player in the Nick Saban era to rush for 1,000 yards in 3 consecutive seasons, which would be a heck of an accomplishment. The backfield also includes Najee Harris, who was the number one running back recruit a year ago, had a very nice freshman season. Let me look at his stats here. He had 61 carries for 374 yards, 4 touchdowns. It's a 6.1 yards per carry average. And then you still have Josh Jacobs coming back, was injured for part of last year, but averaged 6.2 yards carry as well. Did a good job catching the ball out of the backfield, kind of moving around where they wanted him to. Brian Robinson, probably a little bit overlooked, but certainly a very fine prospect in his own right as well. A local kid from Hillcrest here. He had 167 yards and 2 touchdowns as a freshman. If you want to get further into depth, then you've got Ronnie Clark as well, who's a senior, was injured for part of last year, but could also probably chip in there a little bit. It is really top to bottom a very impressive group.
Then they added one signee, right? Jerome Ford.
Yes.
Would be the signee, and I think he's probably, had it not been for the rule change, you would say, well, he's going to redshirt. Now you'll probably see him in 4 games.
Yeah, you know, you'll see him out there against the Citadel.
Yeah, and you may very well see him against Louisville or Utah State or, you know, some of those early games.
Yeah.
And then that's one of the – I think one of the real positives of that rule change is it gives those guys an opportunity to play in at least 3 regular season games, and then you've got them for emergency in whatever postseason you have.
Mm-hmm. I think Jerome Ford's style is probably similar to what Josh Jacobs is. That was probably what their expectation was, that if you can redshirt Jerome Ford this year, then by the time that Jacobs has graduated and left, he'll be a sophomore have some time ready to go. I don't know if we should really include him on this podcast, but Slade Bolden is a guy who some people projected as a running back in college. I think he played mostly quarterback in high school, played defensive back for Alabama in the spring, also might end up being more of a slot receiver.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who has kind of a similar skill set to a Jerome Ford type player.
Right, and another guy who might be a 4-game redshirt.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the bread and butter of this position group is probably going to be the law firm of Harris, Harris, and Jacobs.
I would think.
And Robinson as well. Robinson might make partner in the firm
absolutely.
This year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you have depth. You don't have to wear anybody out. You have different styles. You don't quite have a Derrick Henry, but Brian's certainly a big physical back.
And Najee Harris is a big dude, too.
He is. Bo, I pull for Bo. I hope Bo does well in the NFL. I think he was up and down last year. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair statement.
I think he had some injuries that weren't necessarily publicized.
Certainly a talented player, but I don't think we just finished a defensive line podcast where we were talking about how you replace a Deron Payne. I think when you talk about how you replace a Bo Scarborough, well, you've got this guy, and should be able to do that.
Yeah. Bo Scarborough finished last year with 124 carries for 612 yards and 8 touchdowns. That was 4.8 yards carry. Although I think a lot of people had probably had higher expectations for him based on his 2016 postseason, in particular, the way he just ran over Washington mm-hmm. and Clemson before he ended up injuring himself in the national championship game. I'm always kind of interested in kind of the career arc of Damian Harris. You know, I think I could probably sit here and talk about Damian Harris all day long. He's a guy that we've gotten to talk to a lot and gotten to know fairly well. He's a guy who's on social media a fair bit. But it's also just been interesting now that he's a senior and has been a part of this team for 4 years and been a pretty big part of it for most of his career to see kind of how people have perceived him. I think, you know, his freshman year when he was running after Derrick Henry and Kenyon Drake, there seemed to be some people who were kind of ready to write him off a little bit.
I think first, although he was a USA Today All-American.
Yeah, he's a five-star recruit.
Five-star guy. Although I think there was a little bit, and as a native Kentuckian, you'll understand what I'm saying, that this isn't a slam at Kentucky football, but Berea is not,
right.
You know, he had Louisville level.
Yeah.
Football, you know, it's not big school St. Pius or whoever.
Yeah,
the big schools, even E-Town. I mean, Berea is
out there.
It's a little. It's not the smallest enclave in Kentucky, but it's not the biggest either. And mm-hmm. some of the schools that they probably play Pikeville and Richmond and some of those schools. And
he also, as a true freshman, was running behind the second team offensive line pretty much exclusively, which doesn't mm-hmm. make anybody look good. And, you know, the thing that you heard people say after his freshman year was, I just don't know if he has it. And then the thing that people said after his sophomore year was, you know, yeah, but look at Bo Scarborough, them being in the same recruiting class and given the way that Bo had ended the season. But going into last year in his junior season, I kind of looked at Damian and, you know, we got to see him at Fan Day a little bit. We'd seen him in the spring game and you just start to realize he does everything they want a running back to do.
Yep.
And he does everything well.
You know, the other complaint that I, or not complaint, but the other thing I heard about Damian sometimes is, well, he got run down in that USC game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because
he's got
Adoree Jackson chasing him. So, yes, he did get run down by an Olympic-level sprinter from the USC secondary.
I think as a sophomore, there were a few situations where he broke 40-yard runs, but a 50-yard run would have been a touchdown, and that was one of the knocks against him.
Right.
He just couldn't quite finish. And so then this previous season, when he was able to finish a bunch of those runs, ended up leading the team with 11 rushing touchdowns. I think that was a point of pride for him.
But I think, too, he's I guess they're all Nick Saban players, but I think, you know, he's versatile. I think he shows up in practice and does what he's supposed to do. I think he's a good student. So I think that he has all those intangibles. And his return is again, a little insight into what we do. His return is welcome as an interview subject because he always gives thoughtful answers to questions.
His best answer last year, or maybe just the one that I'm thinking of first, when we were talking to him before the Tennessee game and I asked him how often he smoked cigars, and he said, well, I've had two now, so I guess you could say annually.
I don't know that they've announced their guys that they're taking to Atlanta yet.
They have not, no. But he's a shoo-in.
He's a sure thing. And so you'll be seeing a lot of Damian Harris features and sound bites and so forth in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I've got a copy of the Athlon Sports preseason college football magazine, and he's on the regional cover for this area here. I think he might be on the – he's not on Phil Steele's national cover. He might be on the SEC cover. He's going to be the face of the team, and part of that probably comes down to the quarterback situation as well. You don't know if you want to put Jalen or Tua out there at this point, although Tua is on a fair number of magazine covers at the moment. But – you know that Damian Harris is going to have a big say in Alabama's season this year.
Sure. You will not see a quarterback in Atlanta.
No.
Rest assured of that, too.
Yeah. Najee Harris, like we talked about, was a really highly recruited guy. I saw online today, Rivals went back and looked at their top 10 running backs that they've ever ranked. And he was one of two or three guys that they've ranked as the number one overall recruit as a running back coming out of high school, with the other one being Adrian Peterson. He's listed at 6'1", 228, and, you know, Damian Harris is not a small running back at 5'11", 220, but Najee really is a pretty rare blend of size and speed and agility, and I think folks are really excited to see him take a bigger role this season.
I think so. I think a couple of things that I'd say about Najee. I think he really got burned out on the recruiting process by the time it was over for him.
Yes.
And he came in early, but I think by December of his senior year in high school, I think he was really burned out on it. I think for some reason, and believe me, you know, there are plenty of recruiting writers that cover Alabama recruiting that are diligent and so forth, but I think Michigan writers wore him out. I think that they were really convinced that he was going to Michigan and trying to get something every day, and I think he really got tired of that process in the end.
There's a lot of high school recruits out there who have a lot of attention who will say, you know, no interviews please, and then they still talk to two or three guys a week. Najee was not like that.
No, he
didn't say no interviews. He didn't do anything like that. He just didn't do it by the end.
Yeah, I think he was burned out. He knew where he was going to go, and yeah.
You might recall there were a couple of media outlets that had someone here in Alabama waiting at the airport to confirm whether or not he got off the plane with Tua Tagovailoa from the, I think it was the U.S. Army All-America game that they both played in.
Right.
So until the end of his recruitment, there was a lot of attention on him, even as he tried to avoid it at times.
So so I think there was an adjustment period. The point I'm trying to make is, you know, there was an adjustment period. I think it was good for him to have a spring. But again, and we talked about this on a different podcast in a different context, but people see you in that championship game, man, that they really notice. And in addition to Tua coming in the second half, you know, Najee also came in and had some big runs in the second half. And so I think that that's got, again, we're talking about the number one recruit in America from the year before. So it's not a matter of, he was flying under the radar, but I think people said, oh, there, you know, that's what people were talking about. This guy could be the guy. So he will get a lot of attention, even with all the attention that Damian will get.
Yeah. By the way, when we were talking about Damian, I failed to mention my favorite Damian Harris statistic. Do you know what this is? I think we've talked about it before. Damian Harris, through three seasons at Alabama, I believe, has fewer career carries than Derrick Henry had during his Heisman season.
During the second half of the Auburn game.
Yeah. In
2015. So.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's, you know, partially a testament to the way that Alabama constructs its offense and the way that it distributes the carries throughout its backfield. And it's probably one of the reasons why, you know, guys like Damian are in pretty good shape going into his senior year. He's never really had a major injury at Alabama, knock on wood. And with the exception of Josh Jacobs, the backfield was in pretty good shape all year last year.
Yeah, and Josh was just the reverse. He just couldn't seem to shake it. I mean, he just couldn't seem to ever, whether it was hamstring, then I guess it was a foot. I just never thought he was in the same form at any point last year as he was as a freshman, and physically just doesn't mean he didn't play well at times, but I just never thought he was at 100%.
Yeah. When he is healthy, I think he's probably a pretty significant part of the team. Just based on what we saw him do as a freshman, you'd expect that he would have a bigger role as he progresses in his career. And as a freshman, he was a pretty significant contributor, both as a running back and then as a receiver out of the backfield. I don't know if playing him more, if he were to take a bigger role this year, if that means that you would see fewer carries for a guy like Damian or Najee, just because they do different things. But Josh Jacobs is a weapon that they have, who has proven himself that the coaches, I think, they know they can trust, and still probably hasn't reached his potential yet for Alabama.
No, I there's a best case scenario where Josh has a big year for Alabama this mm-hmm. year. It's just going to depend on being 100% healthy. But there's a new offensive coordinator in Mike Locksley, but Mike's familiar with him, knows what he can do, and just, I would think, gives opposing defensive coordinators just a whole different package to have to prepare for, just based on what he's capable of doing as a receiver and outstanding open field runner when he gets in those situations.
What would you say is a big season for Josh Jacobs? I was thinking maybe in the range of 800 combined yards rushing and receiving.
Yeah, I was going to say 500 rushing, 300 receiving, and 8 or 10 touchdowns. I think he's capable of putting numbers like that up.
That would be a big season for him, yeah.
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 The local standout who we always glad to see players that were in our coverage area in high school, but here's the fact on Brian Robinson. He would be the starting running back at easily half the schools in the SEC.
Yeah, I was going to say 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably not at Kentucky with Benny Snell. I don't know the rest of the running backs in the league that well, but there's nobody that jumps off the page. I don't think there's a
LSU,
Darius
he'd be
guys.
Starting at LSU.
Yeah.
With the guys that have moved on there. Arkansas, he'd be starting at Arkansas.
And he ran tough when he got the ball last year. Yeah. That's one thing that you never really know is going to translate with some of these freshman running backs, no matter how big they are. Because when you're in high school, if you're a guy who's 6'1", 220, like Brian Robinson is, then, you know, you're going to be running over linebackers who are 200 pounds a lot of the times in high school, and maybe even smaller than that. Whereas when you get to the SEC, all of a sudden those linebackers are 230 or 240, and it's just very, very different for you. But yeah, you didn't see him struggle with that at all at the time that he got last season.
I think, again, I'm not going to pretend to have four deep knowledge of every roster in America, but I think if you went into a game, I think there's no other program this year that if you went into a game and they said, all right, your top three running backs are out, you would just say, okay, well, we'll be all right. Whereas with Brian and with Ronnie Clark, Jerome Ford, mm-hmm.
you know, you could make it work
with Brian. You could make it work. You know, you could win a conference game with your fourth running back.
Yeah. Again, I don't think you or I would claim to have complete knowledge of all 130 Division I depth charts out there. But off the top of your head, can you think of any running back situations across the country that are better than Alabama or equal to Alabama?
I don't know. Again, you just don't know. I'm sure Stanford's is good.
Was going to be the first one that I mentioned. Yeah.
If Bryce Love is healthy. Georgia's is certainly good.
Even losing Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, you still have DeAndre Swift coming back.
You still have Swift coming back. And they seem to plug those guys in. I'd be really interested to see FSU's and see how Cam Akers plays. Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin was going to be the other one.
I would think so. Different style guys, but There's not very many. You know, if Bryce Love's healthy, then Stanford's regardless. I'm sure they've got other guys too, but you know, he's a top three Heisman guy if he's healthy.
Yeah, this is also another position group for Alabama with a new position coach, as we should mention.
as are most of the position groups.
Yeah, as Cecil and I talked about this on a podcast during the spring, we said there's three types of assistant coaches at Alabama this season. There are the new coaches, there are the coaches who are coaching new positions, and there's Brent Key.
That's the truth.
Yeah. Joe Pannunzio slides over from tight ends to coach running backs. Burton Burns slides off the field, although I believe he's still keeping his assistant coaching salary. That might have been maybe one of the more surprising moves of the coaching carousel for Alabama this season, given the fact that Burton Burns was an original member of Nick Saban's coaching staff at Alabama, had coached two Heisman winners, was loved by his players, current, former, future recruits. It'll be interesting to see what this group looks like this coming season.
It will. It will. And again, I think Nick Saban would be the first to tell you it had absolutely nothing to do with not being happy with the job Burton had done. You know, he's obviously, they wanted to keep him here. Obviously been a big part of the success that they've had. I think it was just a matter of in the way that the staff got restructured, and I do think that Burton, the toll that the road in recruiting takes on you, you know, as you get older, I think he wanted to see a little more of his family than he's been able to see.
He's getting into his 60s at this point as well. You would assume that he'll probably retire from Alabama at some point, perhaps retire with Saban, perhaps retire before Nick does. But I don't think Alabama is concerned about losing Burton Burns, at least as things currently stand.
No, but the point I want to make is he did an outstanding job, and Nick Saban would tell you that, and it would not just be lip service. I mean, they want him around. They want to have his input. Nick just restructured the staff in a way that he's got a lot of younger coaches, a lot of really active recruiters, and this was part of what he views as the reshuffling. But I don't know that he doesn't still consider Burton basically an assistant coach.
Yeah, with the responsibilities that he'll have, and I'm sure he'll have some say into the game plan. Yeah. I think that just about covers it for this group. So it's going to be it.
Well, I'm responsible, so we'll see how they perform.
If it wasn't going to be the running backs that you were responsible for this year, which group were you going to take? Because I don't think you were going to stay with punter. I don't think that.
I probably would have been the wide receivers.
Yeah,
probably would have been.
Okay.
I think that group's got some promise too. Maybe you can jump in ahead of Taron Wack, and you can be wide receivers.
Yeah, Tommy and I have already recorded the wide receiver podcast.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we'll just go back and edit that one with a disclaimer at the beginning, or maybe I'll take the inside linebackers.
Well, I just felt like with four years of punting, you know, it's time to.
You had a good run.
Different challenge. Different
it was a
challenge.
Good run.
Yeah.
For you and JK.
Absolutely.
All right, absolutely. Folks.
I don't know when we're going to do the punter podcast, but that'll be interesting.
It'll be later. Yeah. We're saving special teams and quarterbacks for more towards the end of this series, although we're saving them for different reasons. So, yeah. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back with more of these as we get closer to the season.